This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We begin with Timothy Young. He's the CEO of the HIV Alliance for Region 2, which includes Baton Rouge, which has one of the highest AIDS rates in America. And Tim has been following this for a long time, and the story, of course, is not all that pretty. And we'll be talking about some of the activities involving his group, HART, H-A-A-R-T. Now, tell us, first of all, for those who are unfamiliar with your work, may have not heard you on your previous appearances on this show, Tim. You've been doing this 17 years?
Right. I started in September of 96.
Turn his mic on.
18 years this fall.
18 years this fall. And Timothy, you began at a time when Baton Rouge had one of the highest AIDS rates in America, and it still does, unfortunately.
It does.
So why are we ahead of the pack in this unfortunate situation?
Baton Rouge has the number one AIDS case rate in the country. Louisiana is number four among states. And I guess that's probably the question that I get asked most often, why is it Baton Rouge? But it's not just Baton Rouge or New Orleans. It's also Jackson, Mississippi, and Memphis, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, Florida, and Columbia, South Carolina. And all across the South is particularly affected, particularly among communities of color. But it's not about who you are or what you do. There are about 19,000 people in Louisiana living with HIV, about 5,000 of our friends, family members, and neighbors in the Baton Rouge area who have HIV. About half of those have AIDS, and we know that one in five who have HIV don't know it, so that's really who we're looking for in the Baton Rouge area, about 1,000 people who have HIV and don't know it yet.
Okay, and we're going to talk a bit more with Timothy Young, who's been on the front lines of this story for a long time in this community, which has been afflicted with AIDS, unfortunately, in a disproportionate way. But we're joined now by the fabulous actress Pam Grier, who's also involved in this issue. And good morning to you, Ms. Grier.
Good morning to you. I hope everyone's listening to your commentary. It's brilliant. Thank you.
Well, nice to hear your voice, and it's a voice we're familiar with, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk a bit with you about your remarkable career. But how did you get immersed in this particular issue, Pam?
Well, being a part of any community, you're going to discover if you have any awareness and compassion about your life and who supports you and has supported you. You look around, and there's a group, a marketing group called 15 Minutes, and out of Philadelphia. And they are associated with this organization called Dining Out for Life. And Dining Out for Life is very prolific here in Denver because it's Project Angel Heart. And it's the largest organization that fights AIDS, supports the organization's fighting AIDS, supports the medical community, supports the community, and making sure that people are fed who have AIDS. And people, as you were saying, there's so many people who do not know they have it, HIV, AIDS. But fast forward many years later, you have a medical society that has found, discovered a way to live with it if we can't eradicate it, which we're doing both. So when I met this group, they informed me, thank God, because sometimes you go through life not being as informed as you would like to be, of Dining Out for Life and its message. And there's a board, they asked me to join. And once I discovered the profound organization and all of its affiliation and its supporters, the Subaru, this is its 7th year supporting Dining Out for Life and all the restaurants, the entire organization and all the people involved in what they do in one day, which this year is going to be April 24th, and 3,000 restaurants in 60 cities are going to participate. And during that day, the proceeds, 20-25% of the restaurants take, will go to a local HIV/AIDS project organization and or cancer organization, which they do support as well, and support and provide nutritious meals and people who deliver them and prepare them. And I just thought, if they do this every year for one day, and in my heart of hearts, I wish it could be every day,
right,
to deliver food. And not only is food being delivered, but people who are very compassionate and not just deliver food and drop it off at the door, but come in, sit, and talk and ask, how are you? How are you doing? You're not alone. A lot of people care. And I've asked that food trucks participate, and if people can't show up at a restaurant, a participating restaurant, and buy a meal or two, if they've got some change in their pocket, if they have a box of change in their dresser drawer at home, it could be $30 worth of change. Bring it into a restaurant and donate that. And you'd be surprised how welcoming, how profound the feeling you will have that you're making a difference. And it could be you. A lot of people don't even know at any time, whether it's blood transfusion, whether it's sexual contact. You don't know where you could contract an HIV virus. Anyone can get it at any time. But I equate to when I was ill with cancer in 1988, and I had to take time off from work. And I struggled, and my family struggled. You impact everyone around you, your friends, your employer, your neighbors. Everyone is impacted by your illness if they love you, if they're your true friend. And I remember how costly it was for me to fly from Colorado to California to get treatment, and that my mom would have to take time off from work. And there were times where she couldn't, and I had people who abandoned me, who couldn't see me, this star, the sex symbol, the actor, ill, and I was abandoned. And I remember days that I'm, you know, how does people who are more infirmed get food, cook food, shop, go places, clean their home, be cared for? I was lucky that I had the resources, but I didn't have the friends, and it was hard on the family.
Do you feel, Pam, like you're a pioneer of sorts based on your breakthrough roles in several movies that we're quite familiar with, and the L Word on television? Do you feel like that you have a place at the table that maybe the rest of us don't?
Sometimes I do. I won't be presumptuous to think that my celebrity, my infamy, will be a guiding light. Because I've gone to people. I've asked organizations to participate. Many can, many don't, many are unable, or it's just not their way. So I'm lucky to be a part of this. I'm lucky to have had be a part of the group who was asked to join and be, you know, Ted Allen and Daisy and Mondo. There's so many people who are involved in this. Ted and I have been one of the spokespeople for the last 4 years. And Mondo has joined Daisy. I think this is her second year. Daisy Martinez, she's a chef from Food Network. And I think we all would like to use our celebrity, what has been given to us, to give back. But it always isn't that way. And I get out in the trenches, and I have, whenever I was on location in a city, I would go and work at a food kitchen, and I'd prepare food, and I'd clean dishes and tables and wipe tables and sit with families and people. Many of them recognized me, many of them didn't. And I, it was okay, because I wasn't there to be recognized for what I do for a living. I was there because I wanted to provide a hand, a hope, and an insight to people, knowing what it's like to be ill. But no, I would like to think that, but I don't think that's the case. I do believe I'm able to get the ear of some. I'd like and hope to get the ear of many. I'd like to exceed our goal. Last year we raised for Dining Out for Life over $4.2 million. This year I'd like to exceed that. I'd like to go for five. And again, I reiterate that if we could, Dining Out for Life for me is every day. I wish people could volunteer more. And you know what I've learned, Jim, is there are people who do not offer their services or time. or money. But when I talk about what I do, they live vicariously through me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a lazy way of, hey, she'll do it for me. Let her do it. Good for her. But I know, honestly, and it pisses me off, there's a lot of lazy people out there who don't donate
there
and who have youth and vigor who could share and do more, and they don't. And I don't know what it takes to inspire them. Maybe it takes for them to hit the wall, to hit the bottom, to be ill and see what it's like. I don't know, but I've discovered that, and it's human nature.
Well, God's blessing that many of us have not had this battle that others have on a daily basis. And you speak as a woman who has been raped. You certainly could have had a challenge like this. You mentioned your cervical cancer, but
it was more than just cervical. Often in the world of publishing, you're only allowed so many words in your book, and they trim down to what, you know, the entire chapter could have been. But it was more than just cervical. It was a large area that really could have killed me. You know, took it parts of my intestines, took parts of just tissue of my uterus, but it was more, and it was more elaborate, and they said, oh, we don't need to tell everybody that, but, you know, they gave me a death sentence. I had 18 months to live. It wasn't just, oh, you can have treatment and you'll be fine. You'll go into remission. No, I didn't have that offered. So with that said, I was very lucky in that, in the therapy and the physicians and my life. I was very, very lucky. And we don't know. Maybe it wasn't my expiration date on a philosophical, spiritual level.
Obviously not.
And was it my time?
And,
but I choose not to be the victim. I choose to rise above it. I choose, yeah, I hit that wall. I hit that wall several times in my life. And to let others know that, hey, if we dive in that way, we might come out the other side. And that's what life is about. And that's what life is about when you know that you can share a sandwich, you can share a seat. Many times I'll stand at the airport or on a bus or a shuttle and let other people sit because I know I can stand.
Well, you became Jackie Brown years after your challenge,
guess who wrote it for me?
Pardon?
Who believed in me.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino.
Who looked at my legacy of doing theater for 4 years. And people, it's really interesting because acting is an apple. And film industry is a pippin apple, Granny Smith. And then the theater is a red apple. And it's very interesting that you're not recognized. If you go off and do theater for 4 years, the film industry and fans think, oh, my God, you retired, or no work was offered you, or you don't want to work. But they don't know that when you do theater, it's the same thing. It's acting, and you have to be precise. There is no take two. You have to be close to perfection as possible. That's why not everyone's running to be, you know, an actor on stage, because in film, you shoot out a sequence, you get a take two. If you make a mistake or flub your line, you don't get that on theater. You have to be perfection.
Well, we're going to take a short pause and spend a few more minutes with the remarkable Pamela Suzette Greer. We'll also hear from Timothy Young of the HIV AIDS Alliance in this area, and from Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice, back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKL. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're resuming our conversation for a few more minutes with the amazing Pam Greer, and she is involved in a big way in fighting HIV and AIDS, and there is a major event in our community next week, and we'll talk more about it with Timothy Young. This is something that is being done in 60 cities, and Pam is right at the forefront. And before we leave her, I think I would be remiss in not remarking more about her amazing career as a breakthrough actress, a pioneer from the 1970s to the present. And Pam grew up, I think, like many of our generation, grew up listening to the radio, didn't you?
Yes. My grandparents are from Cheyenne, Wyoming. They homesteaded there. They're part of the Underground Railroad, the Black West, and they didn't have a television, but they had a radio. It had all the squeaks and the turns, you know, and the dials, and everyone would sit there after dinner and listen to all the commentary. And you would use your imagination. That's why I'm attracted to the Prairie Home Companion on NPR, the radio show, Garson Keillor, and they talk about the great stories, and you're listening and you're imagining, and everyone's quiet, and you're using your mind. You're not getting the visuals, but you're actually thinking and engaging, and it was wonderful. So when I listen to radio and listen to you, Jim, what you're saying is you're really getting to the core of people's subconscious, and that is beyond just the conscious, but the subconscious. And you make a mark, and that's something that people will remember more than something they saw on TV, is because they're listening, they're more intent. And I love radio for that. And you bring people, you know, we didn't have all the books of education, but we had the Encyclopedia, National Geographic magazine on the table. And that's what we read for our knowledge and information, to think outside the box and know that there's a world outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Denver, Colorado, and our maybe marginalized neighborhoods and cities. We used to think, and when we hear what you offer on the radio, it's enlightening, and you have such power in your voice.
What do you think your legacy will be as an actress?
It will be that I brought a political voice to women's sexuality in the 70s. I was a part of the women's movement. It was okay to be equal. It was okay to get an education. It was okay not to have sex with your husband if you didn't feel like it. It was okay to be, you know, where women are today. 40-some years later, there's still a glass ceiling where women will make less than their male counterpart, and we're still fighting that. And yet, my grandfather, Daddy Ray, taught all the girls in the family to hunt and fish and shoot and drive the tractor and change a tire and bring the boat in, because he wanted all the girls in the family to be self-sufficient and not be victimized. And he would say, you don't have to be married to be validated, you know, just be yourself. And he said, a man will respect you when you can do something. And it said a lot. It planted a seed for me that I could be here on a farm that no one else wanted in this area as 20 years ago. It was run down, but it had beauty. It had remarkable origin and sense of purpose. And that's what life is. And that's seeing him and how he raised me, and that it was okay that I don't go out and hunt in clubs looking for a husband, looking for a man to take care of me, that I can educate myself and take care of myself and animals and rescue horses for a therapeutic riding program and do things myself and not be afraid. So
right.
That will be a part of it. And I brought that to film, and I think that's what people have resonated about, who are enlightened from. And that we see younger, you know, women, that I call them my daughters, being so profoundly exciting in film and life and storytelling and adventure, whether it's forestry or going out in the sea, discovering the marine world and not being afraid. I'm not the only one. It was happening all over the world. Gloria Steinem, the Ms. Foundation that I support, she's been my mentor and friend for many years, said, you know, women can be beautiful and put on makeup and be sexy for yourself. And if you're that beautiful flower, people will want to smell it. They'll want to see it. They'll want to paint it and envision it forever. So do that for yourself. Be the best for yourself, and others will just admire that. And I think that's been my legacy, and Quentin Tarantino gave me this great gift. He literally, for 2 years, invested writing Jackie Brown for me.
Right.
Because he knew I'd done theater and that I was really an actor. I took time off from being the celebrity because I wanted to do theater and see if I really, really enjoyed acting, that I really was the actor. And when you do Equity Lord at $300 a week, and you're acting and you're 8 shows a week for 9 months, either it's going to make you or break you, and it made me.
Well, I remember Muhammad Ali once saying, after he'd long since retired, Of course, now he is afflicted and doesn't speak very often, but he said he would look at himself in those old fights, and he would smile and said, I was bad. Now, when you look at yourself in Coffee and Foxy Brown, I don't know if there's ever been a more captivating presence on the big screen than you, Pam. What do you see when you look back at those films?
I was way ahead of myself back when I was younger. I was that theorist. I had read Plato in my philosophy classes and in high school. And he said that women should be leaders and are capable of being leaders, and that it stuck. I lost my mind over that because in the community there was oppression. There was women who really wanted to do things. I mean, look how long it took for women to be allowed to vote or drive a car. And then when I read that, I just became this different person. I saw on screen someone trying to articulate that to the public, to articulate not just gender freedom, but a racial freedom for people not to say, well, we can't go to that because it's a black film. And when I would see I get fan mail from people from all over saying they snuck in the theater to see my films, to see the freedom of women. And I responded to that. I said, "Well, I'm making a difference because I grew up in the Jim Crow era. I grew up where whites couldn't go see James Brown because they would be called a nigger lover, and blacks couldn't enjoy classical music or play rock and roll until it was Jimi Hendrix. And then when I saw these wonderful, incredible civil rights won and artistic freedoms won, I wanted to bring as much of that to a fleeting, populace. When you're pop culture, you have that year to make a point. The next year, it's on to another point. And then the next year, another political point or religious point. So, I only had so much time, and I had a group of people who believed in me. They had a blueprint, American International Pictures and Roger Corman. They had these blueprints of women being independent. And I was fortunate to find them and them find me, and I could give them that political voice and racial and cultural texture to the films and the music. Willie Hutch, Motown, we were expanding. We were not forcing our culture and art down people's throats. We were just presenting it and see who came, build it, and they will come. And they came in mass, and it's still... My films are just now getting to other countries like the Netherlands and New Zealand and Australia and Japan, and they're playing over and over and over. And the L Word, which I was so proud to be a part of, to really learn about the discriminatory practices against an entire global community, and how if you're a thinker and you're a reader, you will discover and learn that the gay world, LGBT world, existed many, many, many hundreds of years, and have been prolifically a part of our community, intellectually, religiously, spiritually. Our scientists, our poets, some of our greatest thinkers, are part of the LGBT community, and greatly herald about of their discovery. And if we bring those to screen, it creates a comfort zone for people.
You have been a true pioneer, and it's great to hear your story.
Well, I'm happy that I'm very pleased that you bestow that honor on me, because I share it greatly with so many other women pioneers.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pam, thank you very much, and appreciate your support of this worthy endeavor, Dining Out for Life, and
yes,
hopefully we'll have occasion to get an update from you. Thank you very
right.
much.
Right. Well, we're going to dine out for life and fight AIDS.
There you go. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're rejoined by Timothy Young, who is the local go-to guy is involving the HIV/AIDS Alliance. And the event that Pam mentioned is April 24th in 60 cities, and appropriately, Baton Rouge is one of them with the highest AIDS rate in America. People I think they have a hard time comprehending that. We're not number five, we're number 50, we're number one, and that's in a dubious category, to say the least. What's going to happen here on the 24th?
Wow, that was terrific. So I want to thank our national sponsor, Subaru, and our local sponsors, Take Red Avenue Studios, who did some fantastic videos on our local restaurants, participating restaurants that are on our YouTube channel, the Heart YouTube channel. You can find those. And our restaurants are Restaurant IPO downtown in Mid-City, Mestizo's, Bistro Byron's, Manjuni's, and Table is Bread on Airline Highway, Jambalaya Shop on Government Street.
All right. Well, Timothy, you're going to have
April 24th.
Yeah, April 24th. All of those places will have meals that proceeds, I think 25%, go to your cause, our cause. It's certainly a worthy endeavor on the 24th, which is next week, the 72nd birthday of Barbara Jones Streisand.
Really?
And Dining Out for Life for HIV.
We should get her to be a Dining Out for Life sponsor.
We should. Maybe she'd bring James Brolin, too.
We should.
But Eliza Jane asked, what's the root cause? You mentioned earlier about the high incidence of AIDS in southern cities. What's the root cause of this? Why?
You know, I think we talk sometimes about how you get HIV, and you get it from coming in contact with a person who has HIV. So it doesn't just jump up on you. I think we do ourselves a disservice by talking about who gets it and how gets it, how you get it. I try to compare HIV sometimes to hepatitis C.
You're saying this, well, that's hard to believe that a lady on his staff who had contributed to his campaign would take him out in front of a camera and set him up. What would it be in it for her? That sounds preposterous.
I don't know. It's hard to say that money would be a motivator, considering the fact that between her and her husband, they contributed $10,000 to his campaign. So it was hard to say that the money is a motivator, but. Something motivated them, I think. I think she was part of it. I think her husband might have been part of it.
Well, you're opening up a whole new can of worms, and you're doing so without any real proof. I think we ought to move on this one, right. Tom. You're going to get us both in trouble, but I don't think he was set up. I think he was a willing participant. But even if he was, is this cause for to throw him out, to say, off with your head, you're not fit to be a public servant?
Considering that he ran on the campaign that he did, the Christian family persona, same way Vitter did, I think just on that basis alone, he should.
So it's the hypocrisy that bothers you?
Yeah, it is.
Well, you say that, but it's hardly possible that someone could campaign as somebody who cheats on his or her spouse and get elected. Usually you have to talk the talk, even if you don't walk the walk.
Right. This is not an unprecedented incident by any means, as we both know. It's interesting writing for all the bloggers and all the reporters and the television reporters. It'll fester for a while.
Sex, lies, and videotape. I think I've heard that somewhere before in a movie made in Louisiana in 1988. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on the air with Tom Aswell. Hi, Paul. Paul, good morning. Bianca, could you turn him up? Thank you. Paul?
Yes, I'm here. Just a question on the whole McAllister craziness. Where did the tape come from? I thought it was a security tape. And how did the security tape get in the public?
That's a legal question. It could be some laws violated there, some federal laws violated by getting that tape, taking it out of the office. Even if it were not a security tape, taking the video in a congressman's office, in a federal office, is an offense. It's a crime.
Lee in LaPlace. Hi, Lee in LaPlace. You're on with Tom Aswell.
Yeah, good morning to everyone. I'm a firm believer that if a man will lie to you, he will steal from you. And if a fellow lies to his best friend, supposedly his wife is his best friend, he'll lie to everybody else. I'll take my answer off air.
Well, it's a good point. Hard to argue that point.
Mm-hmm. But haven't our best presidents been unfaithful to their wives?
Oh, absolutely. Warren Harding, Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy. Lyndon
I wouldn't have put Warren Harding among the best, but
not among the best.
But Kennedy, Roosevelt, Clinton,
and Johnson.
Well, Johnson, mixed review. He screwed up Vietnam pretty badly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put him among
the greats.
But he
gave us civil rights and he gave us Medicare. So.
He did. And he also cheated on his wife.
Yes.
But Richard Nixon probably didn't cheat on his wife. Jimmy Carter probably didn't cheat on his wife.
I would wager a lot of money that Jimmy Carter didn't cheat on his wife.
Okay. I don't know that W has cheated on his wife. And he was, by most rational observations, a poor president.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this group collectively, on the average, who were faithful to their wives, who were bad presidents, and then you got this group on the average who were unfaithful to their wives, who were good presidents. Ronald Reagan cheated on his first wife. He by most rational observations, was a good president. So how can you make a judgment on somebody whether or not they're faithful to their wife and whether or not they'll be a good public servant?
So you're saying we have a trend here?
I'm saying we might have a trend.
Yeah. it's a tough call, Jim. You can't make an absolute statement about anything like that. There's just too many variables involved.
Okay. Tom Aswell is following the McAllister story with vigor. And the Republican Party, the chairman of the party, the governor of Louisiana, they have called for his head. But not surprisingly, they supported the other guy in the race a few months ago, the special election.
Yes.
And there's another election coming up.
This year, yeah.
Will McAllister be on the ballot?
Hard to say. He says he will, but there's a lot can happen between now and then. I don't know if he'll be on the ballot or not. He probably will, but nothing's for certain. He's taking a lot of flack right now.
He hasn't said a word.
No.
Not a word.
Right.
But here's a man who he was a successful business person.
Very successful.
People tell me he's a very charming, nice guy.
I had lunch with him in Alexandria. He was very nice.
And he's caught up in this. Mm-hmm. And we all fall short of the glory of God. So
yes,
is this really fair to him?
Because he's in the public eye, he knew going in he was going to be subject to public scrutiny. That's the nature of the beast. So probably it is fair.
The Duck Dynasty crowd, I'm reading an email from Shannon. Where are they on this? They backed him?
They haven't said much, but I would suspect that Phil Robertson would say forgive and forget, because Phil Robertson, by his own acknowledgement, has his own skeletons.
Well, there you go again. Let's not get into those skeletons unless we have some validation.
No, he has said that himself.
Okay. I thought you were going to...
No.
Okay. Phil is calling. I don't think this is Phil Robertson, but Phil in Jefferson Terrace, good morning.
No, that's definitely not, but God bless you guys. This is so purely interesting to be wading into this stuff. And, something, character takes a lifetime to build. The issue of the character for each individual to grow up as a human being, and the thing about judging other people is really important. And I'm so sorry that this happened, because it just opens up so much more negative political campaigning. It's going to wash down like a sewer on us and stuff, and we don't need that. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking about.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Well said.
Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. I have just two quick questions. When has Louisiana or America been surprised by office affairs? And this is the week of Easter. I think I recall a great man of the Bible saying, render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar, and unto God those things unto God. So when are voters in Louisiana going to stop being milked by people who are so-called Christians, when the Bible obviously doesn't want anything to do with man's government? Now hang up and listen.
Tom?
Well, that was a mouthful. Tying this to Easter, I think that's kind of a stretch, but nevertheless, there are a lot of people that have a lot of strong feelings about this, and it's going to persist. I don't have the answers to this. I know it's a black eye for Louisiana, and we've had black. I mean Earl Long, going back to him in 1959, he had his own affair. People in Louisiana seem to be immune to it these days.
Well, this story has legs,
yes,
and that's
it does.
The understatement of the year. And we're going to find out much, much more about Vance McAllister, whether he'll go to the dance this fall and run for re-election. It's subject to question, but he is not your cookie cutter candidate or congressman. And I'm told by some close to him that he may just run for re-election to tick off some of the people who are shouting at him, and this attack on him may ultimately be counterproductive to those who are leading the attack.
Yeah, it could backfire.
Okay, so Tom Aswell, let's talk with you again soon. Let's slide one more caller in, Melissa in Gonzales. Melissa, please be brief. You're on the air.
Yes, I just think that if a man is going to take vows for a woman and then cheat on her and lie to her face, why isn't he going to lie to his constituents and other people? But I'm interested to know how many women politicians have ever come into a scandal like this for cheating on their husbands?
Not many. And a woman would not be able to withstand this, and that's unfair.
No.
If this were Mary Landrieu, forget about it. It'd be over. The party's over. But,
yeah,
but
there's a double standard.
We give men breaks. We don't give women. And
there are double standards.
That's still the case. But thank you, Melissa. Appreciate it. Thank you, Tom. And we're joined in studio now by Chris Soselsky. He is chair of the Louisiana Young Heroes. And tomorrow night, big affair at the Renaissance involving some of these fabulous young people. And tell us about the event and the importance of it, Chris.
Well, thanks, Jim, for having me on. The Young Heroes event is an event that was started by Louisiana Public Broadcasting. We're in our 18th year. I'm a member of the Rotary Club of Baton Rouge, along with yourself. And we joined forces with LPB in its second year, in the event's second year. So we have honored 141 young adults over the years. The event is intended to recognize young adults between the 7th grade and the 12th grade. These are young people who have inspired others through their deeds and in many cases overcome significant adversity in their life. So I think it's an important event because we all, as we've been talking about this morning, there's so much bad stuff going on the news that we hear about on the radio and TV, and the Young Heroes event and Young Heroes Day is one day a year where we can honor some kids that are really doing really incredible things right here in our state of Louisiana.
And you'll be honoring how many tomorrow night?
8 young heroes will be honored all day tomorrow, culminating in a banquet tomorrow night at the Renaissance here in Baton Rouge.
And one of those is Morgan Gautreaux. You know Morgan, don't you?
We haven't met yet. I'm looking forward to meeting her tomorrow morning.
Well, Morgan is joining us by telephone, and she is truly a young hero. She's had spina bifida and has thrived despite it, and has had quite a challenge, as you can imagine, but she has emerged as a hero. Good morning, Morgan.
Morning.
How many surgeries have you had, Morgan?
Five.
And,
yes, sir.
And despite those five surgeries, you've done exceptionally well at school. What's your grade point average?
A 4.0.
A 4.0. You've never made a B?
Well, yes, sir, I have, but I managed to keep my grades up during all my pain.
So you kind of, in my day, if you made a B, you could never get to 4.0 because 4.0 was perfect, but apparently they grade a little differently now, but I don't care. At any place, at any time, a 4.0 is a good average, so you've done exceptionally well. How did you decide to come public with your challenges, and I know you've addressed the student body at your school. How did this happen?
I just thought it was time to share my story. I wanted to help other people with my case, and I thought it would be a good thing to help other people. So,
where do you go to school, Morgan?
St. Teresa of Avila Middle, and work in Dallas.
And what do you want to do later in life?
Sorry?
I'm sorry?
What do I want to do?
Yeah, what are your future goals?
I want to become a doctor.
Well, that's appropriate. You have been associated with far too many doctors for somebody of your age, and I know you've also raised money for Boston Hospital. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
How did that happen?
When I shared my story, I decided to develop a fundraiser for the Spina Bifida program at Boston Children's Hospital, and I raised about $18,000, $218, $100. So
you did well.
Yes, sir. And
we commend you for what you've done, and we applaud you for the way you've overcome spina bifida. Five surgeries for somebody so young. How old were you when you had your first surgery, Morgan?
I was about 9 years old, yes, sir.
9 years old. And you're doing well, sounding strong, and tomorrow night at the Renaissance, Morgan and seven others will be saluted appropriately as young heroes by those in attendance. And I know LPB has been at the forefront of this event. Chris Soselsky, I'm sure it heartens you to see young people like Morgan who have overcome great odds.
Absolutely. Morgan's a great example of the type of young adult that we honor, where not only has she overcome, in her situation, a significant medical issue, but she has also gone that extra mile to raise all that money to help fight the disease and help others with her condition here in Louisiana or around the country.
And the seven other people, I'm sure that their stories are inspirational as well.
They are. It's a mix. We've certainly had a number of folks over the years, young heroes that we've honored over the years that have had medical conditions and overcome those. And we have some others this year that we'll be honoring tomorrow. But there's also some other folks from around the state that don't necessarily face medical challenges, but they're just going above and beyond to help in their communities. So we've got kids from here in the Baton Rouge area, Shreveport, Pineville tomorrow, Alexandria, Ville Platte. So it's going to be an exciting day.
And I know this is a sold-out event, but for those who'd like more information about the event in general, best contact?
Your best place on the web would be the LPB website at lpb.org/heroes.
There you go, lpb.org/heroes. Thank you for joining us today. Bianca Webb producing. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.